information you can trust, stories you can relate to, and tips and tactics you can apply on your next adventure. Hunting, fishing, camping, and everything in between. This is the Battle Mountain Podcast. Today we have Maddie Wasmer on the show, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Maddie, I actually watched you, and I would assume it's your husband. And if not, please correct me. the two velvet bucks, and I was just like, man, what a I really, really appreciated your guys's the cinematography, as well as the editing style, but then the overall hunt itself was just, it was enjoyable to watch. So, that's what made me want to reach out to you and learn a little bit more about you and your background and how you got started into, you know, videography, photography and editing and hunting and all that kind of stuff. So thanks so much for hopping on the show.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me. Yes, that is my husband, Britton.
Okay.
He and I are filmmakers, photographers, videographers, and everything in between. And we both share the same passion and love for bow hunting. And so we're both from West Virginia. We lived about 2 hours apart. When he met me, I had my own photography business and I was just doing, you know, weddings and families. And I had a full-time job. I worked in human resources for a company. Okay. And that was just kind of my side gig that I started. And he was full-time doing what we do now, traveling and working for companies, providing, you know, photo and video content for them in the outdoor industry. And so we quickly realized we had pretty much all of the same passions, and it made a lot of sense to be together and work together and hang out together. And the rest was pretty much history. So I ended up quitting my 9-to-5 to okay. pursue my dreams. And I feel like he really taught me how to be an entrepreneur. You know, it's one of those things where you kind of have to like give yourself, it's about like freeing up your day in order to make time to chase your dreams. You know, it was like when you're stuck in the office all day, your dreams kind of become a back burner. And so he really taught me how to like step out of my comfort zone. Cause you know, that to me, that was like, oh my gosh, quitting your job. And you know, what am I going to do with my 401k and benefits?
Yeah,
and
scary.
Yeah, I think that absolutely that holds a lot of people back. And so, so yeah, I have to give it to him. He kind of introduced me to the world of entrepreneurism, and now it allows us to, you know, travel the world, and we work for companies, doing photo and video content for them, and we get to travel and hunt and pursue our dreams, and it's been really awesome.
That's so cool. Well, number one, congratulations. I understand it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but
right.
You know, when you work your butt off and you start seeing to reap the benefits of all your hard work, it makes it so much more worth it. And
absolutely.
You know, it's just, it's great to hear, a little bit about your guys' success story. You know, going all the way back to the beginning, what was it that got you into photography and videography?
Yeah. So I have always loved like just capturing people through a camera. My niece and nephew were kind of my test subjects. I would always take pictures of them. And my main skill set is on the editing side. I'm a good photographer. I would say Britton is a great photographer. So he's taught me a lot. He's been doing it, you know, 10 years longer than I have. He's much more experienced and worked for commercial companies where I was just working for, you know, my next door neighbors. But what kind of got me into it was I like editing. I like how can you, you know, take something that looks one way and kind of alter it to look even better.
Yeah.
And I just really got into, you know, all of the apps and things that you can download and, you know, work through to get color grading correct and all that stuff. So that's kind of my skill set. I have like an Etsy store where I sell Etsy presets for pictures and So I do a lot of, he does a lot of the photography and filming, and then I do a lot of the back end editing. So that's kind of my passion, is actually more on the editing side. But yeah, he's taught me a lot on the camera.
That's cool. I remember the first actual camera that I got and, you know, being excited about it for sure, but also being like, what the hell am I going to do with this thing now?
Absolutely. I think a lot of it is like finding like your niche. Like, you know, when you first start doing it, you're like, I'm just going to take pictures of everything. Like my friend's having a baby, I'll take pictures of that. And, you know, one of my friends is getting married, I'll do that. And then I used to, finding your niche. And I was like, I just don't know what my niche is. I don't know what's my thing, you know? And then once I met Britton and we were both so passionate about hunting, my dad and my pap were big bow hunters. And, they would go to Colorado and hunt elk. And, you know, they were big whitetail hunters and turkey hunters in West Virginia. So I grew up in it. I think I got my first bow when I was 4 and I had my first bow kill when I was like 8. So it like once I met Britton and he opened up the world of like content creation for hunting and outdoor industry companies, that's when I was like, oh, this is my niche. Like, this yep. is kind of like, it kind of all fell in line with what I'd been trying to do, that I just didn't have, an exact direction of where I was trying to go with it.
Isn't that it's so funny, you've probably heard the saying, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
How true is that in so many facets of life? Absolutely. But just like literally what you're just saying, you're like, I know for a fact that I love videography, photography, stuff with cameras, editing, but you had no clue yet that it was going to turn into loving, and shooting for outdoor companies and hunts and all that kind of stuff. So how that's so awesome.
Yeah, if you would have asked me 5 years ago if I would be where I am now, I would say you're absolutely crazy. And I know everybody says that, but I'm such a creature of habit that I really would have told you, like, no, I would never do that because I need stability. I have to work at a job. I have to, have a paycheck every week, and I have to know that I have, something to fall back on. And I think when you're an entrepreneur, like you said, like, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Like, people will look at it and be like, oh, wow, they live the dream life. And in one aspect, that's true. But I will say, you'll never work harder than you do for yourself. Like, we grind 100% of the time. There is no, okay, it's 4:00. It's time to clock out now. And I get to go home and watch TV and chill. Like, it's never ending.
Right. So that kind of brings me into one of the next things I want to discuss is, the amount of time, effort, and energy that the two of you actually put in, because again, people on the outside looking in, they see what, in a sense, what we want them to see, right?
Right.
Or I guess not even just what we want them to see, but what we're willing to let them see. And
right.
And I think there's kind of a shift happening where more and more people and companies are starting to show the bad shots and the this and the that and whatever else. So with you guys, I mean, what would you say, like, what does your average week look like as far as work and time put into your business?
Oh, geez. This is a great week, for example, to explain, because this is like, I was just on the phone with one of my friends earlier and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to make it through these next 2 weeks. So this is a great example of what my life looks like. I flew home from Oklahoma yesterday for a film project we did for one of our friends. And today I'm driving 7 hours to go to the ATA show and film for one of my clients there for the week. Britton flew from Oklahoma to Mexico to film for a TV show, a guy who's starting a TV show and wants some content and episodes for that. And then after the ATA show, I get on a plane 2 days later to go to Colorado for another event, and Britton's flying back from Mexico to meet me in Colorado, so he will not have been home in 3 weeks. And in the meantime of all that, I still have to do, my monthly retainer, content creation, video editing, and t-shirt design, and graphic design, and all that in between. So I have no work hours. It's constant.
Well, you know, it's good to hear you say that, you know, for more reason than one, but it's always interesting to me, you know, like I've had several seasons where, I mean, there were some seasons I filmed like 20 something hunts and,
oh wow.
Yeah. And it's just, as you guys know, it's go, go, go. And when you're not going, you're going on something else. You're just not traveling somewhere.
Yeah. It's like, it's all or nothing. Like I'm either traveling and, you know, hunting and filming and doing all that. And then I come home and I might be home for a week, but that whole week I do nothing but sit and stare at my computer and edit and get caught up on all that because the next trip is coming and I gotta, you know, make time to start a new project. And yeah. Yeah.
What, with all these projects you guys have going on, which one are you most excited about?
I would say, let me think about that. The project I'm most excited about. Well, the one that Britton's doing right now is really exciting. It's for a TV show for one of our friends. And it was just kind of a mutual connection through Instagram that kind of linked us up and was like, hey, they're looking for another videographer to kind of help them out. Would you guys be able to go to Mexico next week? And it was just like, you know, like, so like, can you come to Mexico next week or what? And so he made it work to where he could go. And I think they're going back to Mexico the first week of February and then Africa in the spring and then New Zealand. And we'll actually be in Hawaii sometime this summer hunting access deer. We have a friend that lives in Hawaii and he's a really awesome hunter. We call him Sensei because he just teaches you the world of hunting. And so we're going to go there to hunt access deer again. But yeah, there's a lot of projects that go on, but I would say probably the TV show opportunity is the most exciting right now.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you may not know, I don't know what, you know, how extensive you guys have filmed as far as TV shows go, but it's a different animal than like a YouTube series or content for just Instagram and things like that.
Oh yeah, it's a totally different ballgame, and the editing time is really what bogs us down. You know, you can film something really quick, but the back end editing, and I have a couple people that also help us out and work for us doing some editing. So sometimes I'll edit something and then kind of send it to them to make changes, and then they send it back to me and we collaborate. But yeah, a lot of times it's not just a one person thing. Like I can't necessarily edit the whole thing by myself. I have to deviate some because it really, I mean, it takes a lot longer to edit than it does to film. So you can easily get backed up. You know, we're filming every day. Every day is a film. I don't think we ever have one day where we're not filming some kind of content for someone. So I kind of have to have a little bit of help on the back end in my editing to keep the ball rolling forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and what I find, you know, some things that are interesting is, you know, you start editing for whether it be Sportsman's Outdoor Channel, whatever, you know, you go from, hey, I'm going to tell this story to, hey, I need to break this up into four different acts. It needs to have all of the bumpers and stingers and all this other stuff. And it needs to create an arc so that people keep watching it and don't leave after the first commercial. And
right.
You're like,
right.
What? It needs to have a bumper?
Yeah, video editing is truly like an art. Like it's, you know, like people think it's just like piecing it together and it's like, no, it's really, it's like making a movie. It's telling a story. Yeah. You got to think about like audio effects and visual effects and how does it piece together seamlessly. And there's a lot that goes into it, but that's kind of why I wanted to start my YouTube channel is because we do so much commercial stuff that I was like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff we do that like will never really get shown because most of what I film, you know, is for commercial clients.
Yep.
And I'm like, we actually do a lot more stuff than I ever really get to show because I'm always filming for a company. I'm not ever really filming for myself. So that's why I started my YouTube and I posted the video, the infamous Kaibab, where I documented our hunt in Arizona on the Kaibab, where we tagged out on two mule deers.
Yep.
Is because I was like, you know, this is like a really cool hunt that like, it's like, I wish this was getting showcased. And we didn't have, you know, we don't have anybody with us. It's just me and Britt. Like, we don't have a guide. It's just us hunting and filming at the same time and trying to get it all on camera. So that's kind of, I was like, you know what, I'll just make a YouTube. And that's where I can kind of post some of my more like amateur film stuff that it's not like necessarily commercial based, but it's kind of gets people to see what I do.
Exactly. And the cool part is by doing that, you can bring some of the fun back into it. Not that filming and editing for the TV show isn't fun. But when you, as you know, especially now that you have your YouTube channel, the amount of, the lack of structure and the allowance that you can have on YouTube, and you can literally make whatever you want, it really just makes room for, you know, being creative and just going back to just having fun with it, as opposed to, okay, I need this cut needs to be exactly 26 minutes long or it will be rejected.
Right. And so that was one of my friends, Smash, his YouTube handle is like Smash Time. He does a lot of reviews for like guns, and so he's a big like gun guy, so he always is reviewing different guns and shooting range and stuff. But I was talking to him and he was kind of helping me get started on YouTube, and I was like my biggest problem is I can't get out of like work mode. Everything I edit, I want it to be perfect, and I want it to be like, it's almost like a TV commercial, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, you really don't have to do that. He's like, YouTube is very just like amateur film. Like, he's like, you can film it on your phone and post it, and it will get the same amount of attraction.
I know.
That's not like
and somebody that works so hard at making the composition and the lighting and all the stuff like you do and I do, you're just like, what the hell?
Yeah. It's like all my work is like, I could never do that. Like, I could never like just like not put that much effort into it. So it takes me a bit to get new YouTube videos up because I'm very picky, and I'm like, every time I film something, I'm like, no, that's not good enough. And they're like, it's YouTube. And I'm like, I know, but I also feel like I have to put out my best work. Like, that's one of my toxic traits.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, along with that, you know, being very picky, what would you say has been the biggest challenge for you as far as being an entrepreneur is concerned?
Oh, wow. An entrepreneur is just not being able to accept and be okay with the lack of stability. Like, I think there's like I said, people look at our lives sometimes and are like, wow, you guys live the dream. And a lot of stuff that we do is really cool and it's really awesome. And we get to see a lot of cool things and we have the time to do what we want to do instead of, you know, working for someone else. But I think with that comes a lot more stress because like, on Friday, I don't get paid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you go to work, it's like, okay, on Friday, I get paid. Or, you know, every other Friday, I get paid. And when I go to the doctor, I have my benefits card. And I don't really have to worry about my 401k because it's already set up. It's just like, you know, you have to take responsibility for all those things. Like, I don't get a paycheck until I get this amount of work done. And sometimes you work for clients that pay you late. Like, we've worked for some clients that, you know, okay, I did all the work. It was maybe a monthly contract and the end of the month comes and they've told me before, like, I don't really have the money to pay you. And having to just work through some of those kinks that, you know, when you're an employee for somebody else, like that's not something you ever think about. You don't think, oh, what if I don't get paid? Like you know, if you work for a reputable company, that's a no-brainer that you're going to get paid for your time, you know? And when you're an entrepreneur, you take the risk of the clients you work for and, you know, sending out your own invoices and making sure you get paid on time. And, you know, what investments are you making to build your own retirement? Because that's not taken care of for you. And, you know, just things like that, I think that people don't ever think of is just like, it just looks like, oh, we go take pictures and get paid for it and I don't have to go to work. And it's just like, it's sometimes I'm like, I sit there and I'm like, you know what? I kind of miss the feeling of just clocking out at 4 o'clock and not worrying about anything else. Like if the company burns down, it's really not my problem. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm just here. And when it's your company, it is your problem. And so there's a lot more, there's definitely pros. I'm not complaining by any means, but there's definitely like a lot of sleepless nights to get things done because it is my problem if it doesn't get done.
Right. Isn't that the truth? It's like, it's just all of it's on you.
Yeah. And it's a lot of just like that responsibility. I think like, as humans, we want to, you know, rely on somebody else and we want to have like a default, like, okay, if it doesn't work out, I'll just get a different job. Or, you know, if this happens, like, you know, there's always that like security. And I think when you're an entrepreneur, you have to be very vulnerable to like, what if next month, you know, one of my clients, you know, canceled our contract and is like, hey, you know, we're going to cut this off early. And then it's like, no, that's your paycheck. So like there's no guarantee that you're going to make money next month. Like, you have to keep that ball rolling and you have to keep networking and building those connections and making sure that you do things, you know, protect yourself and your business, because you're kind of at the mercy for who you work for.
Yep. 100%. As far as, you know, your work ethic and your drive and your everything like that, you know, where exactly did that stem from? And does it have anything to do with, you know, maybe someone that you really looked up to or you might consider as a hero or anything like that?
That's a good question. I grew up in a family that was very like traditional. Like, my dad pretty much worked for the same company his whole life. Like, I think it's kind of a newer thing in our generation to not work the same job your whole life, as opposed to like our grandparents or our 100%. Parents' generation. Like, they would work for a company their whole life and that's where you retire. And like, to switch jobs for them was very like, you know, like it was like unheard of or unusual, right?
Yep.
Something had to go wrong. And in our generation, like, it's not uncommon to have several jobs in your life and, you know, and constantly move companies. And I think just, I don't know if one thing necessarily inspired me. I think I just knew I was different and didn't want that. Like, I just looked at, like, I don't want to live the same life over and over again every year. You know what I mean? I don't want to live the same year over and over again my whole life, I guess. And my mom is a school teacher and my dad worked for a power plant and we had a really great life and no complaints there. But you know what I mean? I think I was just like the monotony of that. And just like when I went to college for environmental and energy resource management. And it's, everybody's like, what do you do with that degree? And I'm like, I don't know. I just knew that like, if I went to school for education, then I had to be a teacher. Or if I went to school for nursing, I had to be a nurse. And I didn't want to be tied down to that because I feel like, you know, good people always find their way. And I just felt like not necessarily one thing was my calling. I was like, you know, I want to give myself a broad background and a good start to where if I get an opportunity in one thing, I will go that direction. If I get an opportunity somewhere else, don't be afraid to make changes. And I think I just kind of grew up in a family that was like very afraid of change. And when I met Britton, it was the total opposite. He's very, you know, on the go, like, you know, and like, hey, you ready to go to Africa next week? And like, you know, my parents were like, oh, don't leave the country, you know, kind of like that's unusual for them. So I think, and I don't know if one thing inspired me in my work ethic. I think it was just, you know, I knew that I was different and I didn't want the same life that everybody else has. I wanted to, you know, open up different doors of opportunity and chase them because we only live once.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, you mentioned your family a couple times. Do you have siblings? Pretty big family, small family?
Very small family. I have one sister and it's pretty much just like me, my mom, my dad, my sister, and my grandma.
Okay.
And that's, I mean, I have some extended family, but that's like the people that are pretty much the core of our family. And it's a super small family and they're, we live in a really small town, so it's very rural. And for my mom or my dad to get on a plane and go to Hawaii would be like, like something like, you know what I mean? Like to take time off work. So like, that would be like, whoa, we can't do that. You know, like, so.
So kind of to follow up the question with a family question, because I, you know, one of the videos that I saw of you, once I started following you after I saw your guys' hunt, I think it's a little girl and you with cell phone cases. And yeah. is that your daughter, your niece?
That is Britton's daughter. So that Britton's would be my stepdaughter.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm a huge proponent on kids and getting them out in the outdoors and everything like that. And when when I saw that video of you two and the sass that she got, oh, that just made me laugh so hard. That's cool. That's cool. Do you guys just have his stepdaughter?
Yes. Yes. Cool. I don't have any kids of my own, just her. And she's awesome. She keeps us young, and she just turned four. Today's actually her birthday, but she is four going on 14. Let me tell you, she is like, she knows what she wants and she will tell you.
That is way cool. That's awesome. Like I said, I saw that picture and I saw a couple other pictures of you and Britton and I don't know her name, but, and y'all interacting together and everything like that. And I just was like, that's awesome to see, you know? So kudos to you guys.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as far as, your journey through entrepreneurship and the skills that you have acquired and everything like that, obviously we talked about editing a little bit, but what other skills do you feel are some of your strongest skills?
Definitely video and photo editing would be at the top, but something that I've recently gotten into, and you mentioned my phone cases, is graphic design.
Okay.
I feel like I don't have really any extensive training in graphic design. I didn't go to school for that or anything, but I definitely have an eye for graphic design, and especially from, I feel like, a woman's perspective, it kind of like some of the companies that I work for will send us, you know, apparel. And I don't like it. And I'm like, I don't want to wear this, because it's like, I'll wear it because you sent it to me. But like, truly, I'm like, I don't think there's any females designing your guys' female apparel, because I would never wear this.
Right.
And maybe that's just, you know, maybe I haven't, a different opinion than most females, but I'm like, so then I kind of started reaching out to him and I was like, hey, like, I design my own sweatshirts and I design phone cases and stuff. And I was like, if you guys would want some t-shirt design, like, I'd love to help you out on the women's section, like in a nice way, saying, you know, this is not where it's at. just like, you know, I'm like, I want to wear cool shirts. Like, Britton shirts are always really cool, and the female shirts are always really basic. And, rightfully so. I'm sure they don't put as much time into those, because they probably don't get as many female orders as they do. You know, it's a male-dominated industry in the outdoors. So I'm like, I think we'd get more female engagement if your shirts were cooler.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah, graphic design is something that I've picked up, and I can design like different types of products like that. And I'll send like logo designs, and I've worked for some different companies that want like kind of like a brand, like update, like, you know, we want a new logo. We want some branding colors. We want you to do our website and design some t-shirts. And it's kind of just like a brand reboot. I do some stuff like that on the side.
That's awesome. So when you go to start rebuilding a logo or doing something along those lines, where do you draw your inspiration from?
Honestly, Pinterest.
Cool.
I'm a big Pinterest girl. And a lot of times, like, it's like, I need something to inspire me, you know, like, you can't necessarily just look at a t-shirt and be like, okay, that's what I want to make. You know, you want your designs to be original. So like, I can't just create it out of my own head and just think of it. So, you know, sometimes I'll go on Pinterest and I try to get a lot of inspiration from there. I have a lot of boards on there that I like pulling for inspiration from. And sometimes it's as simple as just like a picture that I look at and I'm like, oh, that would be cool. And then, you know, add this deer in as a silhouette, make the background transparent, pop up some, you know, text and make it faded and different things like that. And then I just kind of design and create. And then some of my designs I end up scrapping. And then some of them I'm like, you know, you kind of got to go, you got to work through the kinks to get where you want to be. But yeah, I do a lot of Pinteresting.
Cool. Well, so if somebody is listening to this and they're like, man, that, you know, that her story sounds a little bit like me. I too am interested in, I don't know, photography and whatever else. Or even better yet, if you this year, right in this moment, could look back to yourself, I don't know, 10 years ago, and give yourself a piece of advice, what would that be?
Yeah, it would definitely be to just start. Like, I think the hardest part in something that I struggled with is just not knowing where to start, not like being afraid that, like, you know, I'm not ready yet. Like, my content's not good enough to be on YouTube, so I'm going to wait to start YouTube until I have something good to post. Or, you know, I'm not going to start my Etsy store because nobody's going to buy my products yet, so wait till I have something good, you know? And I think that just is like, for me, that was something that held me back for a long time. I was always like, oh, I'll do that whenever I get something good, or I'll, you know, I'll do that. I'm just not ready for that yet. I'm not experienced enough for that yet. I don't want to reach out to this client because I don't have enough, you know, statistics or analytics to show them, and it's not good enough. And I think it's just like, you just have to start. You have to get rid of all of the negative thoughts in your head and all the fears. Because if there's one thing that, like, I've learned is that, like, if you're not a little bit afraid, and if it doesn't seem a little bit out of your comfort zone, it's not an opportunity worth chasing. Like, every opportunity that we've done has been something that I have been totally out of my comfort zone doing. And if it wasn't for Britton to kind of, like, help me and introduce me into that world, I would have never done it on my own. Like, I would never be where I am today without meeting him and having that like teacher, you know, like he was kind of my guide into this realm. And a lot of people might not have that. And so it's like, how do you get started unless there's somebody like literally grabbing you by the arm and saying, let's go and let's do this. And I think just get started, you know, like it'll like the content will come, the followers will come. It doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to start.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, you know, and it's scary and overwhelming. And What's interesting is the thing that you know is holding you back the most is just that space between your ears. You know, I mean,
exactly.
And once you just get started, not only do you get more comfortable with it, but you also get faster at creating everything and doing it and making them better. And So essentially what I heard from that is two things. One, start. Two, if you know someone that can help you, reach out to them. And if you don't, find somebody, because it's going to fast track your success.
Absolutely. When I started photography, I didn't know anybody in it, and I pretty much learned everything on my own. I would just watch YouTube videos, and I would reach out to other photographers. But a lot of times there's people out there that don't really want to help you. You know, they might look at you as competition, or look to you as like, you know, they don't want to give out all their secret thoughts. And so that's something kind of, I was like, you know what, if you won't tell me, I'll figure it out one way or another. It's not rocket science. Like, I truly believe, like, nobody is smarter than you. They just have more experience.
Right.
So it's like, you just have to dive into there's like unlimited resources now on the internet. Like, there's nothing you can't learn on Google or YouTube, you know? So
yeah. It's
just like, if you can't find somebody to help you, like, dig into it on your own and find the research. There's tons of forums and photography and videography groups now. And one of my really good friends just started into photography, and I was like, that would be great. Like, absolutely. Like, you should do this because I could totally use your help in some areas. And so I kind of like helped her get started. I was like, scratch everything else. Like, this is what you need to do. Like, I'm like, I wish that when I got started, I would have had somebody like me to help me weed through all the mistakes and get me a jump start, you know, and not everybody has that. So anytime somebody ever reaches out to me, I try to be a good resource and, like, you know, give them the truth, because it's like, you know, not like there might be other people that do what you do, but nobody will do it the way that you do it. So, like, it's not really a competition, you know?
Right. Exactly. You know, one of the things that you had mentioned on the podcast questionnaire that I sent out was, was your hero is Jeremy Wade. I'm not sure who that is, but I would love to hear who it is and why they are your hero.
That was like a really interesting question to me. And I was like, you know what? I don't know if I've ever been asked that. And maybe when I was younger, like, who was your hero? And I always would have said like my dad or my grandpa, like somebody you look up to. But then I like Googled the definition of a hero. And I was like, really? I was like, you know, I look up to my dad and I look up to my grandpa and I look up to my mom. But I'm like, would I say that they're my hero? Like, a hero is a very strong word. And I like struggle with like idolizing people. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't really idolize like famous people because I'm like, at the end of the day, they're just a person. Like, you know what I mean? I don't necessarily like, I wouldn't call them my hero. So the only thing that I could come up with that I was like, I don't know if I really have like somebody that I would call my hero, but somebody that I truly admire a lot is Jeremy Wade. He does the show River Monsters.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that show?
Yes, I have.
He travels the world, and I'm a big, like, I love fishing. Like, hunting is my passion, and fishing is, like, maybe, like, just right up there with hunting. Like, they're pretty close second. Because, you know, hunting is, like, work. It's so much more rewarding, and it's super fun, but it's also hard work. Fishing is not as hard of work. You know, it's just, like, it's always fun.
Right.
So fishing is more of my, like, relaxing thing that I really dive into. And I just love watching. Yeah, exactly. I literally own every single DVD of River Monsters. And I've watched them over and over again. And I really resonated with, like, he has, like, nothing holding him back. He just travels all over the place. No fears of, like he's almost died several times. He's had, like, malaria. He's had, like, issues getting into countries. One time he was like taken into custody and all of his equipment was like taken because they thought he was a spy, and he just goes to all these super remote countries. And this was at a time where I was like, you know, pretty sheltered, and I was like, oh, I would never quit my 9-to-5 job. I would never get on an airplane. Like, you know, I just have to stay in my small town bubble and be safe.
Right.
And so I've always like really admired, like, he just does what he loves. He just travels the world and goes fishing. And he catches, like, his thing is, like, to catch, like, big fish, like, river monsters, fish that, like, nobody will go after because they're in such remote areas. And I was just always super interested in that. I'm kind of a nerd in that aspect. Like, I like science, and I like to watch Animal Planet. So
that was,
like,
weird.
I wouldn't
That's
say
awesome.
I have, like, yeah, I wouldn't say as, like, you know, maybe my hero, but he's definitely somebody that, like, I admire a lot just for his, you know, his passion.
No, that's awesome. And I respect that a ton, because I think, you know, I think it takes a lot of courage to go out and do something against the grain and do something that continually makes you uncomfortable. And I don't know, have you ever heard of David Goggins?
No.
No. So check David Goggins out when you get a chance, because he is a proponent of doing something that sucks every day.
Okay.
And, you know, and when you talk about Jeremy Wade, not saying that traveling in the fishing portion is what sucks, but the logistics of that trip might have really sucked, you know? So, like, it's interesting to see someone like that you mentioned, and they end up being so successful. And again, like we've been talking, it looks like sunshine and rainbows on the outside, but on the inside, there might be some crazy shit going down.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think it was just, you know, the like young girl in me that had a lot of fear about the future. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like wanted to stay in her safe space and her zone, that like, when I would watch that show, it was just kind of like, you know, it would give me all the feelings that I wanted to have of, like, you know, traveling and not being afraid and doing all the things that you never thought you could do, and just these out of world experiences that I was just like, oh, this is awesome. Like, this dude's cool. And it was super informational. Like, I love fishing and I love to learn about fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And his show was just very, like, you know, it just brought you along with all of his hard times, his good times. And it's just like, I just, I thought it was super cool.
That's awesome. So kind of switching subjects from kind of the business side of your life and more, I would like to just discuss a little bit about the hunting side of your life. Because, spot stock archery is not easy. And that's probably why so many people want to do it, number one, and then try and film it, number two, because it's, those two together, it's a big challenge. So, you guys were successful on two great bucks in the Kaibab, spot stock hunting. So kind of walk me through some of the tips and strategies that you guys were able to put into play to make that hunt a success. In terms of harvesting an animal, because obviously there's other aspects of success, but I mean a success in terms of harvesting the animal.
Right. One thing that me and Britt both talked about was this past summer we had went, I think I mentioned it earlier, we went to Hawaii and hunted with our friend Stevo on axis deer. And if there's something that you want to do to make you like a better, keener hunter, it would be to try to hunt axis deer with a bow, because it's like probably the hardest hunt I've ever been on.
Really?
And oh yeah, because they're from India, and I think they were given, I think the Emperor of Japan gave them to Hawaii as like a gift or something, like he had them imported from India. So they're literally used to running from tigers. They're keened in on the ultimate predator.
Yeah.
White-tailed deer or mule deer, like sometimes they'll be alone or sometimes they'll be together, maybe with a couple does. But axis stay in a large herd. So you're trying to get to the buck and he's like, there could easily be 100 deer there and they bark. And so like if one of them catches your wind or happens to see you, it'll bark. And then they all start barking and they don't necessarily know what is there yet. But like when one barks, it's like, the hunt is just blown, because then they all start barking. And before you know it, it's just like a herd of 100 deer. You're trying to get within bow range in a huge herd of deer. So it's like, and it's like, it's nearly impossible.
That many eyes.
Super. Yeah, so we did that hunt in Hawaii, and I think that really helped us coming back and trying to just hunt whitetail. I think typically spot and stock whitetail in real deer, like you can, but like a lot of people would hunt out of a tree stand or hunt out of a blind. But when we went to Arizona and we did the Kaibab hunt, we both drew. So we put it together. Britton had like 6 points, and I had one. So I think we had a total of 7 points, and we drew, so we both got to go. And when you go out there, we had known some people who had hunted there before, so we kind of reached out to them, asked them, like, what can we do and what's the terrain like, and get prepped. But we only had one day before season to really go scout. So when we went out there to scout, the very first morning, we spotted two shooter bucks, and one ended up being the buck that Britt harvested.
Which was a stud.
And that was a very, stud. We spotted him the very first morning. We were like, oh my gosh, like this is easy. We'll just come back here. We watched him, watched where he went to bed, and we were like, yeah, we'll just come back here in the morning, opening day. We'll nail this out. And when we get back there, there were so many people there. I think, like, I didn't realize how popular of a place that is, because it's a draw unit. So you think, that kind of limits the amount of hunters. But no, there's a lot of hunters there. And there was like a burn area. So they were all kind of in the burn area. And anyways, it took us about 9 days to kill that deer, because we kind of had to wait the first week and go hunt somewhere else.
Right.
And kind of wait till after the first week, a lot of those hunters kind of start to spread out. And then I was like, let's go back there and give that a shot. And as soon as we started glassing that mountain, I spotted that buck coming off of the mountain into the drainage, and Britt went and sat up, and it all came together. But yeah, I would say things that made us successful was just like, we hunt really hard, but I also think like hunting smart is more important. Like always playing your wind,
yep.
And always always play the wind. I don't think I've ever gone in a situation where I wasn't playing the wind and it worked out. it just doesn't work out. And there were a lot of failed opportunities. There was an opportunity where I got close to probably a 200-inch mule deer. I mean, huge mule deer. And he was within 80 yards and I was like stalking in on him, but he was with like three or four other bucks and I just couldn't quite get close enough. And they're in these aspen trees, and so they stay really hidden, but they're super smart and very elusive. But I truly think that going to Hawaii and hunting access made it easier for us to hunt mule deer and whitetail, because
that's cool.
Yeah, they were very, very hard to hunt.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's I really appreciate that tip, because obviously that's an unlikely tip. You know, anyone can say, well, you know, move slower, you know, or whatever else. But, you know, going and hunting an animal that is typically more jumpy and there's more eyes on you and everything like that, as essentially as practice. I mean, that's a great tip. So, as far as, you know, your bow hunting career and things like that, what is it, you know, you told me in the questionnaire that a little bit about the North American Super Slam. What is it about the North American Super Slam that interests you and makes you want to achieve it?
That was something that Britt and I were like looking at, and we were like, we have to do this. And this is something that just kind of came on our radar this year, that like I'd never really heard of it before. And then we saw it pop up and we're like, oh, we need to do that. And I think it's just one of those things where like hunting never really gets old. You know, even when you tag out on a big deer, it's like, it's not like, okay, I win, now I'm done. Like, it's really not about, you know, the trophy. It's just about the experience. And really, like, when you hunt different animals, like I'm super surprised at how different of an experience it is. Like,
right.
Hunting whitetail versus mule deer is so different. You know what I mean? Like, you would think, like, oh, it's their deer. Deer is deer is deer. And it's just really not. Like, their tendencies are similar, but, like, you know, there's some tips and stuff for mule deer that have just helped us a lot that I wouldn't use on whitetail, you know? And they just, the terrain is so different. So I think it's more or less, it's not necessarily about, you know, I have to have a trophy of all of these animals. It's just, I want the experience of each individual animal, even if I don't tag out, like, just, you know, like, going there and having that experience and getting on the terrain and learning about, you know, how do you hunt these animals? Because it's every time I go, I just, you learn something that you never knew before. And it's just very interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what is your, to kind of close this podcast out, what is your next animal on the list that is going to make you closer to your Super Slam?
For me, it would be an archery elk. Me and my dad went elk hunting. He hunted Colorado with my pap all the time. And Colorado over the counter is like really, really hard. And there's people that are successful at it, obviously, but it's just hard because, you know, these bulls get called to, they get smart. And I've been hunting Colorado for my third year now. And I've yet to even get a shot opportunity on a bull. And I don't know if I'm going to go back to Colorado this year. I might end up going to a different state to try to punch my elk tag. But yeah, I haven't killed an elk with my bow yet. So that's my number one hit lister.
Awesome. 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 Well, Maddie, I would really like to have you and your husband on at the same time. I think that would make for just an awesome podcast with you guys, you know, bouncing experiences and ideas and stories and all that good stuff off each other. But in the meantime, I really appreciate you just taking the time out and being on the show. It means a lot to me.
Absolutely. Britt is very passionate about long range shooting.
Awesome. So that's something that
he got me. Like, I used to just shoot like 30 yards because I was like, that's all I need to kill a deer. That's really all I hunt is deer. Like, I don't travel. And then when I met him, he was like, that's not going to work. Like, we're traveling all over the place. You got to be able to shoot up to 100 yards. So right. He really taught me, like, you know, all the things that I needed to know. And especially as a female who can't, you know, I don't pull as much weight as a guy does. I pull 55 pounds, but like, you know, guys will pull 80 pounds. So I'm a little bit limited on my, how my distance that I can choose. So I think that would be something cool that he could probably talk about is, yeah, you know, long distance and tips and tricks there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you. I enjoyed it.